Well, good morning again, everyone. Thanks, Sarah, for stepping in, offering us the welcome. Couldn't even tell you were doing it on the fly. That was awesome. Thank you. I always feel welcomed when you stand before us and say, hey, you're welcomed here. So thanks for that. And Laura, thanks for the prayer. I don't know if you could hear it up here, but several people out there, I heard plenty of as you were going. So thanks for that. And I got to say, man, post-sabbatical, it's good to sing with you all again. We went to retreat, you know, that first Sunday we were back. I couldn't sing. It was almost overwhelming because I was out of the rhythm of doing that with all of you in such a beautiful four-part harmony a cappella way as we do. But man, not this week. It was good. So Ryan, others, thanks for guiding us through this. It's speaking words, speaking sounds. It's like the music touches a root that's deeper than the words themselves, right? That's what I've been feeling this morning singing with you, so thanks for that. Okay, our sermon today. I have three words for you this morning that I'd like to share with you. In the language of the Old Testament, they are Ekah, Yakal, and Kava. In the language more familiar to our part of the world, they are How, Hope, and Hold. Now, typically on a Sunday morning, we focus on the gospel reading during our time of proclamation. And today's gospel passage, boy, I wonder what you thought of that. It is interesting. Jesus is as perplexing and surprising as ever in the passage we just read. I spent some time with John Wolfgang yesterday, and he said, hey, I read the gospel passage, and my first thought is, oh my, what is Kevin going to do with that? The answer is nothing. I'm not going to do anything with it. Because instead, I'd like to reflect on something else this morning, not just because it's a bizarre passage. I usually like those bizarre ones. But this morning, largely because of our 2025 ministry theme, A Living Hope, I'd like to shift our focus away from the gospel reading just for today, and focus on our Old Testament passage, which is to say this morning, I'd like to talk about Lamentations just a bit, and specifically what Lamentations has to say about hope. But according to Lamentations, intriguingly, you can only talk about hope if you also talk about two other words that bookend hope. And those words are how, and hold. Hence, my three words for you this morning from the Old Testament, Ekah, Yachal, Kava, how, hope, hold. So, to give all that just a bit of context, and since we didn't just read Lamentations, we read it earlier in the service, let me remind you about the book of Lamentations. Lamentations has 154 verses. And as the very English title of the book suggests, a full 85% of those 154 verses, over 130 of them, are cries of lament, despair, questioning. Lamentations is a book of sorrow. It gives voice to the experience of a people who are crushed, a people who have experienced the destruction of their homes, the occupation of their lands, the deportation of their people. But even apart from that particular context, which I suggest still speaks today, these 154 verses speak directly to anyone who has experienced the weight of exhausting despair. That is, these verses speak to all of us. In fact, I wonder if you knew this, the book's Hebrew title is not actually Lamentations. Did you know that? The book's Hebrew title is not actually Lamentations. It is simply Ekah, meaning how, with a question mark and an exclamation point. Those people preserved a book whose only title is How? Question mark, exclamation point. Just consider that for a moment. These people recording their history in poetic form titled an entire biblical book. How? As in, how could you let this happen, O God? It is, quite frankly, one of the few age-old questions. If you were a good God and an all-powerful God, how? How could you ever let this injustice, this sorrow, this pain we are now experiencing prevail? How, O Lord? The thought of my affliction and my homelessness, the poet writes, is wormwood and gall to me. Or, more literally, the bitterest bitterness. My soul continually thinks of it and is bowed down within me. Eka. But then, as you know, we come to the second half of our assigned passage for the day. 85% of Lamentation asks, how? Eka. And laments with a fiercely honest authenticity. But now, here in our second stanza of our verses, we get the other 15%, defined by a very different word. In the language of the Old Testament, it is yachal. In English, we translate it as hope. Nevertheless, the poet continues, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases, as we just sang. God's mercies never come to an end, as we just sang. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness, as we just sang. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. The very same soul the poet has just told us is bowed down within them. Therefore, I will yakal, hope in God. In the span of just four verses, we receive the central tension of this entire Hebrew tome. And we could summarize it quite simply as, how? Question mark, exclamation point, versus hope. On the one hand, how, O God, could you let this happen? On the other, therefore I will hope in you. And I wonder what you think about that transition in our passage today. Because I confess, I am more than a bit confused by the logic of it all. Or rather, by the missing logic of it all. Let me put it this way. Do you like to go to movie theaters? Sit in movie theaters? I presume you do. You know how when you go to the movie theater and you're sitting there watching the film, drinking your 85 ounces of Coke or Sprite or whatever other enormous beverage we seem oddly inexplicably to reserve for just those sort of moments. We're going to be sitting for 2 hours. You're drinking it, you're watching, and then about an hour in, all of a sudden, right there in the middle of the movie, nature calls. You're sitting there sipping away, enjoying the show, and your bladder just starts screaming at you. Are you familiar with that sort of moment in a movie theater? And you start thinking to yourself, maybe I can make it. Maybe if I sit absolutely still, I can just ride this out for another 60 minutes or so. Maybe if I go into Zen mode here, I can do it. But of course, you know there's no way. So you grit your teeth with firm resolve, only to discover those teeth are already floating. And the problem, the whole reason you'd try and sit it out and grit your way through it, of course, is that you also know that the minute you leave that theater, no matter how quickly you move to the bathroom and back, you're going to miss something important, something essential, something vital to the very plot line of the entire movie. And for the rest of the film, you'll be feeling like you missed the key to the whole thing. Has that ever happened to you before? If you're sitting next to me, I'm not filling you in because I don't like talking during movies, so you're out of luck. Well, that's how I feel when I read Lamentations 3. And I wonder if maybe you can sympathize. As if somewhere between how and hope, I've gone out for a potty break and missed something essential, the most important moment that tied it all together, the part that should have brought it together for me. I mean, I get the plot line of the first part. The thought of my affliction is wormwood and gall. I get that. And I get what's going on in the second part. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. God's mercies never come to an end. But in between, I seem to have missed just how the two are supposed to be connected with one another. Lamentations can at times come across as if cobbled together out of two incompatible experiences. And I want to say to the author, to the poet, maybe make up your mind here. Which one is it? Because surely we can't have both how and hope, can we? And so in the midst of my confusion this week, as I was thinking about this, wanting to say something worthwhile about hope, I did the only thing I know how to do when I am befuddled by the Bible, which I confess is regularly. So I decided just to sit with it, just to not figure it out, just to wonder about it. I mean, I wouldn't do anything magical. I was just waiting, which is precisely when one final word grabbed my attention and worked its way into my theological imagination. Kava, which in English we often translate as wait. Waiting, as in wait on the Lord, but which might more freely be translated as hold. Hold in the Lord. But what might that even mean? When I was in fifth grade, I once spent the night at my friend Brian Vanderstoop's house. And at some point in the evening, as 11-year-olds are wont to do, and I know this because I have one living with me at the very moment, Brian and I managed to get ourselves in some sort of trouble with his parents. I can't remember exactly what it was that we did, but what I do recall is it was something his parents took significant exception to. Whatever it was we did, they were none too pleased. And so Brian's dad, Paul, took my friend into a separate room, I presume to save him the indignity of being reprimanded 80s style right there in front of me. When Brian finally returned from whatever reprimand he had received, and it was clear his dad was very disappointed in our behavior, Brian let me know how ridiculous he thought the punishment was. He told me his parents were overreacting. He said what we had done was not that big a deal, honestly. Come on. And he couldn't understand why they were so strict about this sort of stupid stuff anyway. In other words, he told me he thought his parents were being utterly asinine. Of course, we didn't know that wonderful word at the time, but had we, it is what exactly he would have said. Now, I had a friend in college who said, I love the word asinine because I feel like I'm swearing without swearing every time I say it. That's how we felt. Now, I tell you all of that to say this. Not 2 minutes after Brian had finished his tirade about his parents' asininity? I don't know. About his stupidness. Brian's parents called out to us. We were downstairs, they were upstairs, to let us know they were going to bed, that we should not stay up late, and to be good. And then his dad yelled out, I love you, Brian. And without a moment's hesitation, Brian shot back, I love you too, Dad. I confess, I was stunned, or rather, I was perfectly perplexed. Brian had just spent the better part of 15 minutes complaining about how stupid his parents were. And then, without any sort of sarcasm whatsoever in his voice, my friend let his parents know he loved them. Now, keep in mind, I was 11 at the time and perhaps a bit slow to understand these sort of things. Nevertheless, I was so startled by it all, I couldn't help but ask, how could you tell your dad you loved him when you just spent a quarter of an hour talking about how silly you thought he was? And that 11-year-old kid said back to me, don't you know? You can love a person and think they're totally stupid all at the exact same time. I confess I was floored because no, as a matter of fact, I did not know you could do those two things at the same time. And I confess I sat there for some time wondering how in the world Brian knew that you could hold those two things together at the same time, feeling like my whole world had just been shaken up and stirred just a bit and then tossed back in my lap, looking rather different now that Brian was done with it. And I've never forgotten that moment. It is good, our poet proclaims in the final phrase of our passage, that one should hold in the Lord. But hold what exactly? Well, perhaps what the poet means is something like this. It is good that one should hold both. How? Question mark, exclamation point, and hope in the Lord at the very same time. In other words, perhaps it's the very same lesson Brian Vanderstoop tried to teach 11-year-old Kevin all those years ago. How and hope may be opposites, but that's no reason to believe they can't be held side by side in the very same bowed down, lifted up soul. You see, I was presuming life was simply an either or situation, either one or the other. If I question, what does it mean to say I believe? If I challenge, how can I at the same time affirm? If I am sunk in sorrow, how can I hope? But Lamentation seems to be suggesting something entirely different. It seems to be suggesting that the opposite of one profound truth is not a falsehood, but another profound truth that you are meant to hold at the same time. And as I figured that out, as I rethought that lesson from all those years ago, once again through Lamentations this week, I confess, I found that simple realization both liberating and remarkably relieving, because it means that now I have free rein to vent freely my frustrations and fears, both to God and, perhaps more importantly, about God, without, in that very act, feeling as if I have somehow abandoned all hope in God as well. I can vent and hope in the very same moment. Hope, miraculously, can coexist with how. Somehow, some way, we can hold them both in a single soul. Or at least, such is the witness we have received from those who have gone before us, from those who have actually gone through the very bitterest bitterness. A witness that proclaims there is sorrow. That is a fact of our world. There is pain and prejudice and pointless persecution. And we are right to speak out against it and to speak out against God for letting it be. And yet, even so, we are also right to nevertheless, at the very same time, proclaim our hope. Not because of wishful thinking or blissful ignorance or because we turn a blind eye to the tragedies of this world, Were we to do that, we wouldn't need hope at all, right? But exactly because we don't turn a blind eye, because we are not ignorant and we face it head on, we can actually have hope. As Cornel West says, I simply cannot be an optimist. I refuse it. However, I will always be a prisoner of hope. And why? Because we, like the people of Lamentations, believe this, that the powers of this world simply don't get the final word. Because we believe, as the poet sitting in exile proclaimed all those years ago, God's faithfulness is great. God's mercies never come to an end. And maybe, just maybe, tomorrow morning, those mercies will be new once again. Eka, Yechal, Kaba. Amen.